Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. Whether or not our conversation here today gets at the crux of Hey Arnold, at the very least, I bet we'll be able to illustrate our points and maybe even add some paint. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry Mackin. You can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
That's right. And Jason is only with us in spirit today, but if he were here, in person, virtually, I would say something like, just like that Robin song, he's in the corner watching us podcast. Super producer Jason Daphnis. There's this cool dance episode coming up. That's where that plays in. And you can find Jason on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. Good morning. In less than an hour, aircraft from here will join others from around the world. And you will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Mankind. That word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interests. Perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July, and you will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We are fighting for our right to live, to exist. And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night, we will not vanish without a fight, we're going to live on, we're going to survive. Today, we celebrate that kids is spelled with a Z. Also with us today is a very special guest making his grand return to the show. And for the first time in season 3, we have with us Seth Zarate. Seth, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. I am filled with patriotic vigor from your speech. In the words of my generation, you can find me on Twitter at SN Zarate.
Oh, that very, very well done. And not to lead the witness a little too much, but you know, coming into this episode, maybe feeling a certain way. Is that right, Seth?
Yeah. You guys invited me back for season 3, and I was looking through the titles of the episodes, and I saw School Dance, and I was like, oh, I know this episode. This is definitely the one with the band that plays that song full of spoonerisms. Miss Susie had a tugboat. It had a little bell when she went to heaven. It went straight to hello, operator. And I was like, oh, I love that. I've seen that episode so many times. Count me in. And then I realized I have never seen this episode at all. So it was a delightful experience, but not what I intended. It was like getting on a plane and showing up in the wrong destination, but having a great time.
I could not have picked a better metaphor myself. And honestly, I love that energy coming into this episode. We're very glad to have you here. It should be noted that we are here today to talk about episode 57 of Hey Arnold, which is season 3, episode 17, going by production code order, if you're keeping track at home, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to start with episode A, which is called Girl Trouble, original air date, December 14th, 1998. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold snaps at school after Helga tries his patience once too often, causing him to pour paint on her after she pours some on him. He learns that Grandpa had a female bully at his age who was much like Helga. It is revealed at the end his bully was Gertie, aka his wife, And as we always do, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. It was co-directed by Sherm Cohen and Frank Weiss. Sherm Cohen actually co-wrote the episode as well, and the other co-writer, just checking my notes here, Greg Bartlett? So shout-outs all around. And Emily, I think we should kick it to you first. What did you think about Girl Trouble?
Yeah, man. Our favorite topic here at Stoop Kids, Girl Trouble. Or should I say Girl Trouble? Wow. So yeah, Craig wrote this episode. And as Harry noted in the watch party, this clearly Craig wanted to write a Helga-specific episode, and this is what he landed on. So really fun episode and a lot to also struggle with, I think, as far as like cringing at the ways Helga behaves in this episode and just being like wanting to take her by the shoulders and be like, come on, girl, like, please, let's just treat Arnold with a little morsel of respect. Just show him just for a second, maybe, that you do care. And she just can't. She like just simply cannot. She keeps like stepping on her own feet every time she's about to even try to do that. But yeah, I think this is a very funny episode, and it starts out with this great energy in the classroom where Simmons is teaching about parallelograms. And then as soon as the bell strikes, like it's 2 o'clock or something, he switches immediately into a history lesson. So I feel like that was a nice and like funny little nod to teachers just having to do it all for kids, like just carrying the weight of the world on their shoulders, especially in an elementary school setting. But yeah, so we also, this one just recalled a lot of like my own childhood memories in school where you have to like move your desks around and you're sitting in the groups. And they're in like a group project setting. So I liked seeing all of that as the setup for this episode. But really, we're here to find that flashback of Grandpa with you wonder who it is. You're like, is that Grandma he's talking about? She has Francesca Marie Smith's voice. She looks like a Helga character, but she's in the black and white flashback. She treats Grandpa in the flashback exactly like Helga treats Arnold. And then so the payoff at the end there, that is Grandma, that is Gertie is Pookie. That's really a nice ending to this episode. And I think overall, too, this is just like Craig, I guess, and the writers setting up Helga and Arnold even further on their romantic trajectory. But it's not without its like, not hiccups, but just like weird twists and turns, because Helga just does not know how to behave around him at all. And you see that throughout the whole episode. But yeah, I just think it's really funny. It's funny she gets him, gets Arnold with feathers on his butt. And then after he's walking away with feathers on his butt, she's like talking to herself and just going, man, this is how I show my joy for you, is by gluing feathers to your butt. If only you could see, this is my lost, lonely soul's cry for attention and love. Like, oh gosh, Helga, like just speak to him, instead of gluing feathers on his ass. But yeah, a great one, a really, really good grandpa episode and grandma episode. And you see that tender moment between grandma and grandpa at the end. That's so sweet. But yeah, it's really funny, and I'm excited to hear what y'all think about it. It's a great episode.
Yeah, very great. And no, you're totally right. Craig's presence feels really obvious in the episode. Otherwise, we would never get such lines like, you make buffalo savvy. Like, no other writer would bring that to the table. That's unheard of. Moving the mic along, let's bring Harry into the fold. Harry, what did you think about this episode?
Thanks, Cody. I'm glad that you brought that up, because that was like kind of my big takeaway as well, right? Is that like it feels like once or twice a season, Papa Craig just stops by to be like, I'm going to put on a clinic on how you do a Hey Arnold episode. And he just like sends one straight down the plate that they hit a homer on, right? It's like so much of this is just like a return to form. Like we're touching upon the sort of core themes of Hey Arnold. This is one of the big, great, the kids are all right episodes, I think, right? Like the overarching theme of this episode is this idea that like Arnold and Helga will get on each other's nerves, and there will be this sort of like so much tension, so much cringeworthiness, as Emily noted, that it might come to be sort of an existential threat to the both of them. But in the end, they're going to default back to who they are, because who they are as people are still good, and they're the people that they're falling for, right? Like, I even think the sort of intergenerational messaging amounts to that much too, right? But yeah, I mean, like, way beyond the sort of like obvious and great theme of this episode, it's just like, it's so obviously written with so much care and affection. We get a bunch of absolutely phenomenal Helga speeches in this one. At one point, she refers to her Machiavellian scheming in order to become groupmates with Arnold, which is amazing. She does this while she's looking at a book, or a textbook that she has hollowed out so that she could put a little like fetish to Arnold inside of it. Really good stuff there. Really good interactions with her and Big Bob in this episode as well, and just sort of like that sort of like preteen dad-daughter interaction that they're just a little bit too young for, but it's really nice to get some of that. At one point, she calls Arnold a zygote, which was, like, wild to me. But, like, there it is, right? Like, that's Craig, like you said. I think even, like, they even leverage Grandpa in the way that Grandpa is usually leveraged to great effect in this episode, right? Where it's like Grandpa can't really give Arnold any good advice because he doesn't know any more than Arnold. He sort of like bumbled his way through his life and ended up where he was largely because of people other than him, right? Like Gertie. And that's okay with him. And that's what it means to him to sort of like take life as it comes. And he even references the fact that like, oh, when I was growing up, I asked my dad for advice, just like you're asking me, and my dad said, don't eat raspberries, which is like almost Grandpa's tagline at this point, which I'm so gratified by. But yeah, I mean, like, I think that legitimately the stakes in this episode are really good. I think it's awesome that Arnold ends up sort of like committing this like ultimate non-Arnold behavior by pouring paint on Helga back, right? And like, I really like that the episode takes the time to be horrified by that. At one point, Grandpa calls him, what was it, like a paint-toting thug or something along those lines. That wasn't exactly it, but that's a hilarious scene. It's hilarious that Helga herself is so shocked and appalled and blames herself so wholly for doing this to Arnold, for inflicting this behavior on Arnold. But then ultimately, right, he calls her and apologizes, and she reacts the way that she always reacts because she just can't help herself. But in spite of the fact that neither of them are there yet, right? Like, neither of them can get to the point where they can move forward in this relationship, or where they can acknowledge these parts of themselves that are going unacknowledged, particularly Helga, if only because she is more aware of her lack of acknowledgement. It's okay, right? Like, I think that the big idea here is that, like, hey, it's okay for you to be grappling poorly with emotions that are bigger than you have the sort of intellectual or emotional capacity to deal with right now. And that doesn't mean that you're bad, right? Like, I think that this episode really goes hard on Helga, really sort of like commits to Helga as bully. But at the end of the day, I think it's also okay with her, right? And I think that that's kind of important. And I think that is kind of what Craig is doing here, particularly with Helga. And that's very cool. And yeah, like I said, this episode's hilarious. It's sort of like just a classic, I guess. You could almost put it anywhere in the series, but it's great that it's here. And I liked it a lot.
For sure. And speaking of classic, we've got Seth in the fold as well. Seth, I know not the episode you're expecting, but hopefully it hits you in a good way regardless. How'd you feel about it?
Yeah, no, I'm glad Harry said that it felt like a classic, because really, like, right from the get-go, it did feel like, oh, this episode could have taken place at any point in the series arc, and it would have made sense. Like, all of the classic sort of character moments were there. I am constantly reminded, like, this is going to be probably the coldest take on this podcast, but just like how good the music is, how well, yeah, like the instrumentation plays into just like the comedy. For me, it's when they are first in a group, and Phoebe is talking about the Native Americans that could be part of the diorama. And she says, like, including my favorite, Sacagawea. And then Gerald is like, don't you mean Sacagawea? And there's like this like drum stig. And I was like, that shit, like, that's a little dated, but for some reason, still so funny. And it felt very timeless, maybe because we grew up in the 90s or something, where, like, looking back from an adult perspective, you could kind of see, like, yeah, like what Emily was saying, like, Helga, like, you are just being such a bully. Like, you are just being so toxic. Like, things would work out so much better for you if you could just be open and honest and communicate like an adult. But then you're reminded, oh yeah, these are fourth graders and these are the antics. Are they still in fourth grade in season three? Okay. Cool. But just like, yeah, it was charming. It was just like, oh yeah, these are the archetypes at play, and they will do this forever. And it is timeless, and you will enjoy it every time. It was like a Tom and Jerry episode or something.
Wow. I love that you left it at that characterization, because I think that, like, that adds like a nice bow on like my attempt at sort of reading this episode. And like, that goes for everybody as well. Like, or kind of like everybody's thoughts up to this point, it does feel like them, like Craig and friends specifically sort of leaning on the, yeah, Helga always pulls this stuff, and yeah, it's cringeworthy, and yeah, she should probably know better right now, but she, just like a machine, she literally has to like slap her face to like get her back to like her actual programming, like without being too third wall breaking about it, but just, you know, going over the top enough while still committing to the fact that, yeah, this is an episode of Hey Arnold, and like that makes it funnier. It makes all of the great, you know, the lines in this episode, the plopping feathers on Arnold's wet glue butt, which I did audibly laugh at. Just the comment, just the way that was animated really got me for whatever reason. Arnold standing there defeated, and Helga very slowly was just like, whoosh, with this thing of feathers. It's like, doink. Yeah, so that's always a winner. The separate people have shouted out lines from Simmons and Helga, and their lines are really great, and also the readings of those lines are, I think, especially great. Simmons being so over the top earnest at the beginning, tapping into that sort of like stressed teacher wearing multiple hats that Emily was talking about, but just like Simmons is really sort of on point for that first 30 to 45 seconds, where it's just very much like, okay guys, and now we're doing this other thing that is actually not very fun, but I have to sell you on it because I'm a teacher. That all played really well. Helga getting into like the breathless sort of shrieking like corners of her vocal, you know, capabilities was really fun. We don't necessarily get a lot of that, or at least I don't know, in this particular way, rather it just hit me a different way. And I guess my last sort of thing is just like the pacing of this episode felt really different. It does feel like a return to form, and we get that in these like conversations and these archetypal, I mean, for the show, archetypal characters that are so like, hearing Grandpa and Arnold talk for like three or four continuous minutes is like something that we really don't get in a lot of episodes. And remember, these are like 11 or 12 minute half episodes, and there aren't a lot of scenes in this episode. Just like once we got to like the fifth scene, there's like 2 minutes of the episode left. I was like, oh wow, that's like very unexpected. They're usually more like a rapid fire. We have like a montage in here somewhere. So like that's not a bad thing. Letting those like those characters and those bits of dialogue breathe a little more, I think, is like a really nice distillation of, as Harry said, at the show returning to form. So that was really super cool.
Yeah, I really liked what you said about Grandpa in particular, because there are two separate Grandpa conversations in this episode, right? Which is very unusual when you consider that this is like a 12-minute episode of the cartoon. And especially when you consider that the creator wrote this episode, it becomes very clear that, like we've been talking about, this is almost like Craig Bartlett almost sending like this, not to his staff, obviously, but almost to like watchers, like, this is what's important about the show, right? Like, I'm gonna tackle the really important relationships again here, just so that we can sort of like reorient ourselves. I really liked what Seth said on that, by that same token, about the Tom and Jerry cartoon, because like, one other thing that this episode does, and I really like this episode, but it does sort of like demonstrate by contrast just how diverse Hey Arnold is as a show and how far afield it can go from its original sort of like conceit, because this is almost like a transportation into a world where like there could totally just be a version of Hey Arnold that's syndicated, that's 200 episodes long, that is just this episode over and over again, right? Like, plenty of cartoons have done that, and you could totally do it. It's like, oh, Helga's going to make a nuisance of herself, Arnold's going to be put out by it, something else is going to happen, then they return, right? Like, that plot arc is totally something that was like, it had to be part of the original pitch of Hey Arnold, and it totally makes sense, but it sort of by contrast demonstrates that like, oh, like we're doing so much more than that, right? Like even this episode plays with that, right? Which is where I think the grandpa stuff comes from. This is also a great example of grandpa doing the other grandpa thing that I like, which is that because of his advanced age and wisdom, quote unquote, he's so canny that he is very nearly fourth wall breaking, right? Where he is like constantly sort of like gesturing at the tropes of the scene that he's about to inhabit, where like the second time Arnold walks in, he's like, oh, it's Arnold back from school, but wait, he's got a stormy look on his face. What's wrong, Arnold? You know what I mean? It's like always just like straight up setting up for, or like curving towards self-awareness and giving the moral of the episode, but then just going completely sideways in a comedic way to give you what is clearly not the message either. And I love that stuff. And I think that even that stuff is really like Craig playing with and sort of winking at the audience in a way that is like, it's just a really nice amount of faith and like respect that the show has for the audience, right? Where it's like, even though it's like, it's such a moralistic show, it never comes off as preachy, I think, because of things, elements like that.
Yeah, I like that grandpa too, right away, as Arnold walks in with the stormy look on his face and the feathers on his ass, is going, oh man, what she got, girl trouble? Like, he kind of knows. But he also just, without even really knowing much about Helga, he's like, I know that she likes you. Like, come on, Arnold. She definitely likes you. She's jumping rope across from the boarding house. I see her. And the cuts to that scene where Helga's just right outside of Sunset Arms, like, oh my God, stalking him, sort of. But yeah, I just like that grandpa was right on the nose there. And then it cuts to his whole flashback, which you're like, is this grandma? Is this grandpa and grandma this whole time with the same dynamic? But I also just wonder what y'all think too about like this whole Arnold snapping, quote unquote, because even grandpa's reaction in that second conversation is so like funny, but so over the top. Cause he's like, oh my God, Arnold, you did what? You like gave it back to her. You put paint on her. Like those were not the instincts I was telling you to follow. But his like reaction, yeah, I'm very interested in hearing about that. What do you think, Seth?
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where like I think it's something that Hey Arnold does really well. Where watching it as an adult, like I imagine if you were a kid, if you were a preteen or younger watching this show, you could read Grandpa's reaction as sincere. And you would feel bad for Arnold and you would say, oh yeah, like he really acted out of character. And like, you could tell he must be upset and, you know, like Helga pushed him too far. But if you're watching it as an adult, or the reading I took was like, oh no, like grandpa is really hamming it up and this is tongue in cheek. And he is sort of poking fun at Arnold's temper. But like, I don't think it, at any point he is sincerely concerned with the character of his grandson. And so like, I just thought that was a really, I don't know, like a really clever way of playing it both ways. You've talked about it before, like Grandpa Phil, like he's got it.
Yeah, no, totally. I think it is, I agree with that sentiment completely. It does feel like I mean, it's Grandpa as a character and Grandpa also as like a mouthpiece for the show and for Craig Bartlett being like, oh, heavens, Arnold did this thing that is like relatively out of character. And it's like, ah, that's fine. It's like, we're not worried. Like canonically, he'll be like, he will return to normal in like 5 seconds. And it does, I think, play into that sort of winking that we've been talking about. And like, I guess another drop in that bucket, I promise this won't derail, just like another sort of piece of supporting evidence is like, I got thinking about how this episode was potentially playing with like being referential or just like things potentially coming full circle. And I noticed, you know, Grandma was donning the karate outfit again, and it made me think of the episode Mugged, which Craig also was also a writer for. So just like, it's like, hey, violence is never the answer, Arnold, just like winking at like a shadow or a sibling or a spinoff of this lesson that we've already contended with. Like, hey, we've already seen Arnold snap, kind of. Like he became, you know, a Joker-fied or whatever in episode 9, I think it was. Just like, so like seeing a different version of that, like with a little more nuance, you know, a differently paced episode. The mood is completely different. It's not like, you know, Arnold doesn't go down a sort of dark path. There is something hammy feeling about this episode, which again is, a episode in like 5 or 6 scenes, it feels like, I swear. But, yeah, I think like there's a fair amount of winking, and I mean, who else would you bring in to walk that line finally than show author Craig Bartlett? Am I right?
I mean, it's self-referential is the perfect word, and it's self-reference within self-reference, right? Like that isn't, Craig Bartlett is Michael Manning. He's referencing himself in his own later works. He's Time is Lucking, right? You love to see it. What a king. And like, what a perfect, like technique to utilize for like this sort of modern, postmodern cartoon. I think that like, there's also a lot going on with the grandpa reaction and Arnold's sort of like out of character moment. I've gone back and forth on how successfully the show demonstrates that Arnold also has a crush on Helga, just because I think that the show does a different thing effectively, which is demonstrate that like Arnold is almost in like this weird, like pre-crush stage where like he doesn't know what that feels like yet really. And is sort of developing it by like proxy through Ruth and Lila. But like, I think a big part of why Grandpa's making fun of him is because Grandpa knows that like he had a crush on Gertie, right? And like that's part of why Gertie got such a rise out of him. So like the fact that Arnold is coming home and like always talking about what a hard time he's having with Helga and how pissed off he is at Helga, it's like it's some evidence that like the fact that somebody gets a rise out of the like Buddha like Arnold must mean that like that's a crack in Arnold's armor, right? That makes Arnold a little bit more human. And so in some ways, like you can kind of celebrate Arnold losing his temper, or at least I can. And like, that was obviously never the way I felt to Seth's point when I watched it originally, but like there is something nice about this show saying like, hey, this character Arnold that we love so much and that is so often like idealized as beyond reproach and saint-like is also a human, right? Like he's a growing boy and he has a temper and like he maybe has these weird feelings about Helga that he can't reckon with, right? Like I almost wish the show would explore that a little bit more, but I think it's touched upon here. And I think it's done so with a definite purpose, especially when you consider what an ardent shipper Craig Bartlett is himself of Arnold and Helga.
Yeah, totally. And you're right. It is good to remember that Arnold is a real hero and a real human being. Anybody else have any lingering threads, thoughts, shout outs about episode A before we close this one out?
Emily already shouted it out, but that one scene where Grandpa goes, I see her jump roping outside the boarding house all the time. And then it cuts to Helga like in shadow and jump roping like so fast, like she's got like this energy to burn and she's right across the street. It's like Cape Fear, where like she's so menacing in that moment. And like the fact that it just cuts to that and then cuts back inside, it's an unusual cut for Hey Arnold. And I absolutely lost it. I think that was the hardest I laughed in this episode. And this is a very funny episode.
Yeah, on that note, I don't know that this is a shout out so much as it is shade at her shrine because of how creepy it is in this episode, especially. You like get to that scene and you're like, oh no, man, we've got some issues going on here, little lady. But yeah, no, I love that scene that Harry just talked about. And my other shout out is for the stay in school poster at the very beginning. Stay in school, kids.
Doesn't make any sense because anyone who saw that poster is already in school. You're literally preaching to the choir. Come on.
The final shout out I wanted to give, when they return to Mr. Simmons' class, before the whole paint incident, Mr. Simmons is going around, asks if anybody needs help with paint or glue. And he says, no, not you, Harold. Is that what he says? But
it's
he does.
Scissors. He says, does anybody need scissors? Not you, Harold.
Yes.
And it's like just a second throw away. And then we're back into the episode. It's
exactly.
Not dwelled on at all. It's so good.
Such a nonchalant, like throwaway line. I might be reading into this too much, but like that is, it made me think of like Gene, right? From Bob's Burgers, the son Gene. Like, there's a whole character made out of that type of comedy where you're like, he's just in the background dropping these like crazy non sequitur, hilarious things. And I was just like, oh man, like that's such a good line. And it really is just like there for whoever catches it. So I'm going to shout it out. I caught it. Mr. Simmons, you're a real one.
Another real hero, human being, etc. I'm gonna speed through this outro for episode A because I did not heed Grandpa's advice. I did eat raspberries. So we'll be right back. Don't touch that dial because we've got another episode coming up after the break. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. Up next, prepare to boogie because this episode B is called School Dance. Original air date, December 14th, 1998. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold is in charge of the school dance. He books has-been singer Dino Spumoni, and when he sings a depressing goodbye song, all fingers point at Arnold, especially from Rhonda and Helga. And once again, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. Stark Howell directed this one, and Steve Vixton wrote it. Shoutouts, shoutouts, shoutouts. Harry, what did you think of this school dance?
Hey, thanks, Cody. I like this episode a lot. I love Steve Vixton. He's a great writer, and I always like a Dino episode. They always stick out to me because they are kind of weird. You know what I mean? It's like the central conceit of this episode was very funny to me, particularly the fact that Arnold, after getting Dino Spumoni, all of the kids in his class are like thoroughly unconvinced, which of course they would be. Imagine bringing Frank Sinatra to a 69-year-old Frank Sinatra to a school dance to play when all of these kids are like, hey, like, why didn't you just get a DJ who plays Dua Lipa or something? That, to use Cody's example, I really love that they're like, that Arnold is like this weird jazz kid at the school. He's like, oh, I listen to my grandpa's records. I like them so much. I've got this sound system up in my room. I listen to jazz on, and everybody else is like, what, Arnold, what the hell? Like, what are you talking about? So in particular, Rhonda, the fashionable one, just absolutely will not get off Arnold about this. She's dragging him around about the Frank Sinatra or Dino Spumoni, which, like, it's funny, right? And I think that, like, that sort of weird tension is also something to this episode because, like, I always love that it's always Dino that has the arc in these episodes, right? Like, Arnold teaches him that, like, oh, just because your glory days are gone by doesn't mean that you're not still a legend, doesn't mean that, like, your music isn't still here to be appreciated, especially by a new generation. If you give it to them in the spirit in which it was originally given, it will be received, right? And it's like, that's all well and good, but, like, Arnold is our way into this story. It's like, it's so funny to me that this episode took the time to be like, well, we're going to tell this story about the twilight of a jazz singer's career and how it feels to be a 69-year-old has-been. And it's like, what exactly did you want kids to get out of this one there, Vixen? And like, obviously I get it. And I even get it, like, because Arnold is our character sort of like, and how he interacts with and interfaces with the last generation or the previous two generations has always been important to the story, right? Like the fact that grandpa is still relevant, that they still have a relationship. This is sort of an extension of that, right? The idea being that like, oh, there is still something that kids can pick up from the previous two generations. It gets a little bit like, am I the only one who still listens to real music for me? Especially because like they do this thing where Dino Spumoni made a rap album and that's supposed to be like evidence of his has-been-ness. To be fair, I don't think they're disparaging rap in that joke. They're disparaging Dino. They're doing like a Dylan Goes Electric thing. So it's not problematic. It's just kind of funny. And all of this sort of, it results in this very offbeat, very funny episode that sort of, especially like in coordination with the last episode, which was so down the middle and so a return to form, really like advertises the great breadth of the show Hey Arnold to me, where it's like, we'll get this classic episode and then we'll have this weird episode that is about this pre-established crooner singer character brought back into the fold to do another episode about his arc and how he relates to these fourth graders. And it's like, when they sat down to make this show, was that what they were thinking? Is that like, oh, we're going to introduce Dino Spumoni, the stand-in for Frank Sinatra, and we're going to tell some stories about him? It's like, probably not. Like that's a weird place to go with this show, but I'm glad that they did because it creates very funny episodes like this one. So good on them, I guess, for their creativity and their offbeatness, I guess.
Yeah, Harry, one thing you were saying about this sort of connection to the past, I would like to welcome you to my TED Talk where I am going to suppose that this episode and its themes about relating to the past through a bygone pastime, this is actually Hey Arnold Does Field of Dreams. I had recently watched Field of Dreams for the first time on a airplane ride, and this gave me some of the same feelings. At a lesser degree, it's not as tugging at the father-son heartstrings, but there is a little bit of that with, you know, like Arnold connecting with his grandfather about this shared passion of that has sort of lost its luster in present day. But it really was just like it. This is the next part of my TED Talk where Seth, the white guy who doesn't even know jazz, attempts to explain jazz, like where like it was this very like offbeat but charming, just sort of like almost in, if you look at the two episodes together, like this is what Hey Arnold is. You have this sort of ongoing conflict with Arnold and Helga. But in the meantime, here's this other episode that is obviously very music influenced. It is very sort of offbeat and quirky. And it takes Arnold, honestly, on these adventures that you would not expect like a fourth grader to be held responsible for booking the talent of their school dance with $75. And somehow he gets a meeting like with a talent booker. And is like, and the guy is taking him seriously until he learns his budget. Not that it's, you know, a 10-year-old coming to him looking for talent. It's great, honestly.
It is great. I love that point. The only thing I'll add, I see your Field of Dreams and raise you one Bull Durham. Because at their core, these middle-aged dude baseball movies are all kind of the same. And you know what? Bless him for it. And bless Emily for being here as part of our Stoop family. Emily, what did you think about this? I was going to say a boogie woogie, but then I couldn't find a way to slide that in. So what'd you think of this boogie woogie, Emily? We'll go with that.
This boogie woogie, Emily. I really like this episode too. It's a super funny episode. I think Dino, especially. I mean, as y'all have pointed out, he's the main character in this one, and all of his lines are so funny. And like, he's so self-referential and everything. It's a great episode for him. And I like Seth's point about just like, but where is that coming from? Like, what, we're just focusing on this crooner from who's out of his heyday for this whole episode, who's supposed to be doing the school dance performance. Yeah. So it doesn't really make sense, but it's just like a lot of fun to watch. And I wrote down a lot of his lines that were funny. But I first, again, I guess I want to shout out Simmons, because he, again, at this episode, the start of this episode, he had a great line about Rhonda's in charge of decorations. Eugene was in charge of procuring entertainment, but since his recent and bizarre collision with a bunny float in the Easter parade, Arnold has to do this. And then, yeah, we see Arnold be Mr. Manager of the music business, essentially, having to, he's even sitting in that chair, yeah, trying to land entertainment for $75 and getting laughed out of the music office, in like the recording office. But yeah, super funny. I like seeing all the kids dancing and in their dance outfits. I really like Helga, who's just like straight faced during the last performance of My Last Bow, which is such a funny song. Y'all can get into the lyrics of that. Cody, I'm sure you want to mention some of those. As the balloons are just like sinking to the ground because of how freaking depressing the song is. Like lead balloons. But yeah, Helga's just like straight face the whole time. And then at the end, he comes out, he does the full brass band number. And he's like, you know, he's with it. He's hip again. The kids are loving it. And even Helga starts doing a little head nod shake. Like she's dancing along to the song, and you just don't really see moments like that with her character that much either. I was realizing, like, just little, like, she's actually enjoying herself, and she's moving and grooving to the Dino track. But yeah, what else to say? I think Gerald and Phoebe dancing together to like close out that episode. Very sweet. You love seeing that. And yeah, I guess shout out to Mr. Manager Arnold, who is in charge of managing this crooner's last performance ever at an elementary school.
Yeah, that's that interaction between excuse me, Arnold and I was about to say Mr. Manager and Dino Spumoni. It's, you know, it is the through line through which this episode, you know, rides. Like, that's, I mean, there isn't, like, thinking about it, there's not like a ton, there's not a ton of meat on this episode, which isn't to say that it isn't good. It's just like, it's the beats feel sparse in a similar way, at least for me, as like something like Girl Trouble was. Obviously two completely different episodes, but we do spend so much time with Dino Spumoni, and we, you know, we, not our first, you know, introduction to him by any means. He was in, oh God, I just had them up, but he was in episode, I think 4 and 26, 26 being Partners. And the one with the demolition of that theater, I'm blanking out at this point, but like, you know, it does,
the old, we get a reintroduction.
Yeah, yep, exactly. You know, he gets pulled into that, and it is sort of like, it feels like an intentional conscious reintroduction to this character. And there is, like, in a way that we, I don't want to say that we don't get with like characters and episodes of this type, where it's like somebody, you know, like working with Arnold about like rehabbing their image, or like, you know, going out for one last ride or one last show, or just like, you know, not quite the urban legend episodes, but like, you know, think of this episode maybe, well, I guess Mickey Kaline, that is sort of like an urban legend esque character, but just like similar roles that they occupy. But those episodes are so different because Mickey Kaline is, you know, he's receptive to what, you know, Arnold and the sort of spirit of the show has to offer for his sort of arc. Whereas Dino is like, there's, you feel this disconnect between Dino and Arnold basically all episode. And it's, you know, he only listens, you know, he registers that like, okay, then my last show will be at PS 118 only when all other options are exhausted. It does, you know, it feels like he's talking to a wall. He's like, yeah, you know, okay, whatever, I'm going to go to this school. It may as well be like Arnold isn't even there. And then he goes on stage, he does his sad little mope show. And like, and that's, you know, it's just a completely like different energy that is sort of like, anti Hey Arnold, like anti that, you know, again, that sort of spirit of the show. And it, you know, it eventually does come, you know, full circle. Obviously he and Arnold have, you know, that moment at the end, and he, you know, he does, kind of get, you know, spruced back up a little bit, but he's, you know, he's so stubborn. He's so curmudgeonly, and, you know, boomery for so long. It just, I almost felt strung out. I was like, man, how long is he going to be such a butthole for? So yeah, I don't know. Like I guess that is the one thing, remaining that, yeah, just sort of, you know, I, because that occupies so much of the episode. And yeah, I guess, I don't know, Harry, does that make any sense? Does that kind of fit with your reading of at least that, like that situation, you know, the dynamic between those two?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought up Mickey Kaline, because that was exactly where I was going with it. This is definitely like a learning archetype episode within Hey Arnold. I thought a lot about Crabby Author as well, or even a lot of the Grandpa episodes, like the episode where Grandpa thinks he's dying that we just covered. There are a lot of episodes that sort of invert the traditional mentor-mentee relationship that Arnold has with people, right? Where Arnold, the child, ends up becoming mentor to this sort of disaffected adult. And other media has done this before, right? Like even shouting out again, Emily's favorite Wes Anderson movie, Moonrise Kingdom, is kind of like this, right? It's about how like children have something to teach adults too, in the sense that like their idealism that hasn't yet been sort of broken by the world can actually return adults to a proper way of seeing the world before they became as cynical as they were. That's a sort of a classic design of children's media, but like I think that it really does great heavy lifting here, in the sense that it, I think that it's like demonstrating how children can be, can have a place in adulthood while continuing to speak to children, right? Like, I think that most of that media, like even honestly, things like Moonrise Kingdom, that's media for adults that's talking about the children's like role that they can play to adults. Whereas in this is talking about the role that children can play in the lives of adults to children, right? Like it's saying like, hey, like Arnold, you still have this power, right? Like your perspective, your insight is still valid. It's still relevant, even to people who are much more experienced than you, sometimes because they're more experienced than you, right? Like this episode is saying like Arnold's perspective on Dino Spumoni is the right one. And Dino is wrong because he's Dino, right? Because he lived it. And so like having this outside perspective and having this sort of like what Helga would call this unerring, impossible idealistic attitude can actually be the right fit for a situation, right? Even if it is born out of inexperience or naivete, which Arnold always is sort of portrayed as, right? So there's a triumph there that that I like quite a bit in this episode and in episodes like it. But the one caveat that you brought up, Cody, that is really interesting to explore that I hadn't really thought about before we started talking about it, was the way in which like in a lot of these episodes, the comeback is not a real comeback, right? Like this is still Dino Spumoni's swan song. Mickey Kaline is still retiring at the end of that episode. So that's really interesting, right? Like I think that this realism behind like, look, Arnold's idealism can't change reality. It can just change your perspective on reality. I'm really interested in how that plays kind of across the show, and particularly in episodes like this one. And I think Dino is a pretty good like instrument for exploring that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, you're right, change of perspective. It's, you know, he sings, you know, life was a gas, but that gas has passed. I've gone from Top of the Pops to the back of the class. And it's just a matter of like singing that very somberly and morose to just like, well, you know, the gas has been passed and that's okay, man. Yeah, you know, it's all about perspective. And you know, the sort of, you know, this episode does feel kind of painfully, in a good way, aware of that sort of like the sad necessity of putting Dino Spumoni in a situation like this. Like it is wrong, but also correct to have him be the choice for like the musical number in this elementary school dance, just as it would be probably, you know, correct, but also very incorrect to see, you know, anybody from that like tryout montage to like have any of them be the musical act, you know, right in that like they are sort of more present and any of them sort of embody that, that like idealism maybe that the show and Arnold as a character evoke so well, if for any other reason, just because of their immediate sort of relationship to Arnold and his generation. But they would be the wrong picks because they do not have a history of being talented in the way that Dino Spumoni has been. So, you know, yeah. Sorry, Mr. Kokoschka.
And it's also, it's funny, right? Like there is sort of an offbeat humor and almost a black comedy that, fits in this episode, right? It's that like Dino Spumoni was a legend. He was essentially Frank Sinatra. And the idea that he's going to play his farewell show at a school is like kind of brutal, right? Like there is a real like passing of the torch, like end of an era feeling to this. It's like if you had made a couple of different directorial choices, this could be a Christopher Guest movie. You know what I mean? Where it's just like really laughing at the absurdity of the situation that Dino's
in. It could be Waiting for Spumoni.
Exactly. But like, and there's something to that even, right? Like to this idea that, and the show is more optimistic than this, so it can't really play in this sort of irony. But like, Dino has to embrace that, right? Like if he wants to be happy, he has to sort of like deal with the inherent absurdity of the fact that he was once the king and now he's literally giving a present, like a concert for kids. And like, what do you do in that situation? And like, Arnold's perspective is you give the best concert that you can give, and that seems to be the show's as well, ultimately, right? And like, there's some wisdom there, I think.
Yeah, I want to pose the question we were talking about in the watch party, which is who in this day and age would be the Dino Spumoni showing up that all the kids are rolling their eyes about as the school dance performer? I'll kick it off with, I had mentioned Michael Bublé and Josh Groban. Just thinking of someone who's like too adult and too boring, and kids especially would just be like, oh my God, who even is this?
I have been thinking about this, and I'm going to take it, the spirit of the question, in a slightly different direction. Instead of a traditional crooner, I'm going to say Usher. Who definitely had mm-hmm. a peak, is more R&B, obviously.
It's a really good answer, actually.
But like, yeah, if anybody under the age of like 18 heard Let It Burn, they'd be like, what is this nonsense?
Oh my God. No, I feel so old, because right and, when and you yeah. said that, I was like, what are you kidding? Like an
exactly.
Usher concert, he would tear the house
Grandpa
down.
Grandpa Phil saying like, oh yeah, like this is what I would boogie to, you know?
Oh God, no, I feel so old.
Man,
was
I think
James
Confessions
Blunt.
Is timeless though. Confessions Part 2.
No, I mean, I think so too. It's a great album.
I have that CD in my car still.
As you should.
But maybe we're just old, Emily.
Maybe we're all old.
I said James Blunt.
True.
I don't think that's as good as Usher, but I feel like he was like on top of the world with You're Beautiful, and then he like disappeared. Or if you really want to get cringy, like maybe the band Train. Do you guys remember Train?
Oh,
they were
like
a really big deal for a while there. I remember doing Taekwondo to Train songs. Back in the day.
That's a dad rock band.
Real dad rock band, yeah.
Real 100%. Dad rock hours, yeah.
Like, dad rock, this is a whole tangent, so I feel like dad rock used to be so much more like the pop of the moment than it is now, whereas today's pop is like kind of actually interesting and a little bit dangerous feeling because it's like hyper pop or it's like hip hop, whereas like I feel like back in like the late 90s, it was like Sugar Ray and stuff. Was like the thing that played on KDWB or whatever. Anyway, what do you think, Cody?
So I had no answer, and then magically I thought of some recent recent experiences I had that jog my memory to this, and I'm gonna say the name, and then I'm gonna tell like way too long of my rationale for it. And so my answer is Howie Day, and. Similar answer, I think, to James Blunt, in that, you know, they had like, James Blunt had like the one song, you know, he had You're Beautiful, which he was extremely well known for. Howie Day Collide was the big one. Very, very formative song for me. She Says also, I think, was on pop charts for a little bit. There might have been a few others, but he was like definitely somebody who made music and like had a catalog to go through. I see Owl City in the chat. I'm just going to shout that out. If you want to say stuff about that hair, you definitely should. But my my rationale, I was because it's going to take, you know, too many like storytelling acrobatics to like bend around it. I'm going to talk about Quidditch. So like I've played Quidditch since college at one of our like national championships. The musical guest was Howie Day, and this was like, you know, late. Or I guess early 2010, like it was like 2014, I think it was. And so like well after his peak, still a recognizable name. And like people from my generation were very hyped to like see him. And like, and he was aware of, you know, his trajectory as an artist where he performed. It was just him, just like an acoustic only set, just kind of when there was a break in the day. And he even made a joke that was like, you know, hey, I just wrote this in the hotel on my this morning. Hope you like it. And he just plays Collide, you know, his most well-known song. It was very funny. And like flash forward to 2022, I was with some friends this weekend, some of which are like, you know, not a half step, but just, you know, like enough years younger than me that they like completely missed and were not cognizant of that Howie Day sort of moment. Like I feel like there is that couple year window where just like you heard Collide on the radio and like you know that song by heart just about, unless I'm like over promising, because I definitely do. But it was just like, oh no, I have no idea who Howie Day is. And that's how these kids feel about Dino Spumoni. Obviously there's a bigger age gap, but just like they're just young enough to not care about who Howie Day is, despite the fact that he, or and same with Dino Spumoni, despite the fact that they have a discography and they had their moment. So Howie Day is my submission, but there are a lot of really, really good submissions in here.
It's a really good
Emily?
One, Cody.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, so all of these answers are so great, and it's making me think of just, so music to shop at Hobby Lobby too, basically. Music that like comes into stores like that's like 5 to 10 years later, and you're just like, oh my God, why are we listening to this? You know the employees hate it. Everyone at the store hates it. And there you are, bopping along to, yeah, Howie Day in Hobby Lobby.
I thought of so many more. I mean, like, do you remember the band Keen? They had that single, Somewhere Only We Know.
I love Keen.
So not many movie trailers.
Song, but, like, that was, like, yeah. One of the first pop songs ever that I was like, this is my song. Like, this, I would, like, it would come on the radio and I would, like, everybody be quiet. I turned it up. I was, like, 11 years old or whatever. I would be like, this is the one. This speaks to all of my, like, worldliness at 11 years old. So painful, so good. I would love to see Keen. The Fray release.
I was literally going to say Fray after you yeah. said Keen. I was just, I mean, like
the difference is that like I don't think the Fray were ever really on top. I think that they had their big single and then they kind of disappeared, but that single was huge.
They had a couple. I think it's important to distinguish like the one hit wonders from like the ones who maybe had like an album or two specifically where it's,
I mean,
like
that,
you know,
that,
a single or a couple
album
singles
was amazing. I think I got it for
yeah
like, my
I think the Fray fits that for sure. I think they fit it sure. really well. They had a couple singles where they were like top of the world, baby.
If we want to be really spicy and sad, you could say the Strokes. Ooh, apologies to the Strokes. I really like those first couple albums. Room on Fire is great. It is great, but you know, etc.
We got to wind this down before we have all the fans of these artists coming after us.
True.
All the Swifties that canceled us in the last episode just coming out for us with pitchforks blazing.
Your engagement will be through the roof, though. So. I would be remiss.
And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, listen, this is going to be the worst thing to drag this out for. So I apologize, but I'm going to go ahead and go for it. I was thinking more about like, okay, what is music that came out before I, Seth, was like alive, like 10, 15 years or like too young to care. And like, you know, Dino Spumoni fans, like, it is that where I'm like, okay, I know that they're well regarded. I just do not care. And Elvis Costello is who came to mind. I was just like, I am told people like his music.
This is perfect.
I do not know this man. I do not know a single song that he performs. If I went to a party, they're like, Elvis Costello, I'd be like, okay.
Yes, that's such a good answer too, because now it's making me think of like the bargain bin area at Electric Fetus, the record store I used to work at. Just there's a whole row of like all the discounted CDs and also CDs. So it's like they've collected so much dust over the years. But there's definitely a heck of a lot of Elvis Costello and that type of thing in that record store.
He's also the perfect answer because like, I loved Elvis Costello in high school, but also I was Arnold. I was the weird jazz kid who was like, am I the only guy who listens to real music anymore? And it was like, oh, you put on Every Day I Write the Book or Watching the Detectives? And I'm like, I'm jamming. That's it. I put it on in the school dance and nobody else got it. So shout outs Elvis Costello. I think that's my favorite answer of all of these.
Now that we have every fandom that has ever been created at our stoop with torches and pitchforks and slingshots ready to give us wedgies, I do think it is time we wind this one down. Any last lingering shout-outs or threads that need some exploring before we close this one out?
Oh, I would just say shout-outs to the simple things. Where have you gone? I'm getting old and I need something to rely on.
So true. Also, I'm just going to shout out some lines because there's so many funny lines in this episode. I like when Dino goes, yeah, sure, I'll knock him dead. And he's in the context of he's talking about playing his last concert at an elementary school for kids. Just really funny throwaway line there, or not even throwaway. You know what I mean, hopefully, listeners. And fellas, Simmons, the depressing like announcement of Dino Spumoni at the second performance, because it's like one of those SNL announcements, but like the person is the actor, whoever, is just like not enthused or they're tired or whatever. And they're like, here's Dino once again, Dino Spumoni. And even they animated his eyes to be like, he's got bags under his eyes and his eyes are really tired. And then one last one for Rhonda going, wow, Arnold. And she's like going off about how great of an idea this was in the end. And she's like, he was so out that he's actually in.
When you explained that, Emily, my brain first went to something different. In reality, it should have gone to the Daniel Craig on SNL saying, ladies and gentlemen, The Weeknd. But what it actually went to was Don Pardo announcing the musical guest. This is like, with musical guest Dino Spumoni, which is not really what we're going for. But yeah, hey, we found our way there eventually, right? Hopefully this was a nice act for the school dance, which is to say the thing that you're listening to. It's a podcast. Harry, did you have something? You put your hand up and then put
I'm
it
good.
Back down.
That was an accident.
Oh,
I'm glad we could trick Cody into giving a Don Pardo impersonation, though.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't actually an accident. Now that the air has gone out of it, I just wanted to say shout out to, I brought this up before, but like, it's so funny. It's such a good brick joke that like all of Dino Spumoni's songs reference assaulting people. Like he's constantly talking about all the punks that he's going to beat up. And like in other episodes, it talks about how like Dino Spumoni was always like knocking out reporters and stuff. And that is just such a funny throwback to like how those guys were, that I just think is hilarious. Like all of his songs are so wild in that he's like, oh, if you, like, there's obviously you better not touch my gal, but like there's also in this one, it's like he says, get out of my way, I'll fatten your lip. It's like when your back is to the wall and your keister's in a sling. It's just good stuff he's got going. Great songwriting.
Hey, listen up, punks. I'm making a point, and it's that Seth has been a great guest on this episode. Seth, thank you so much for being here today. Tell us, where can people find you, and is there anything you would like to plug?
Nothing to plug. As always, it's been a pleasure. Actually, check out Try Love, a movie podcast. No, but thank you as always for having me on here. It's a pleasure. You guys make revisiting a classic quite the enjoyable time. If you want to see my other bad opinions, you can follow me on Twitter at SNZerati.
He is, you know, if you need another lightning rod for your sports content, Seth is famously another sportsman. So follow him. Follow him online. Don't follow him in real life. I bet he doesn't like that very much. But all that is to say thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. That's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody _BH.
I've been Harry Mackin, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And thank you, Seth, king of the school dances. I've been Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
And see you all. Just one last thing. Dad, you want to have a catch?
Oh, I know life can be cruel. One day she makes you a king and the next you're a fool. In the blink of an eye, your fortunes can swing. So jump right in, 'cause it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. I ain't the hippest cat in town, but I'd rather be a swinger than a clown. So call me a fool, but this fool can sing, and that's all I need. I'm packed for the trip. Get out of my way, I'll fatten your lip. Hey, look at me now, I'm back in the swing.
Spicy bean raspberries.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I have a sound effect for this.
Oh. <There it is. laughs>
This is not the soundboard. This is me after having eaten raspberries.
Jason's definitely going to edit that in after
yeah,
your
I know.
Conclusion.
All right, there we go.